Hallo und herzlich willkommen zur neuesten Ausgabe der Filmkritiken hier beim Telestammtisch. Und diesmal ist es ein Special, auf das ihr euch freuen könnt, denn euch erwartet keine klassische Filmkritik. Nein, ganz im Gegenteil, euch erwartet ein Interview. Denn wir hatten die Ehre, Taika Waititi, den Regisseur, Schauspieler, Comedian, Drehbuchautor und vieles weitere, den man unter anderem ja auch vom dritten Thor-Teil kennt, zu interviewen. Denn jetzt am 23. Januar 2020 kam endlich Jojo Rabbit ins deutsche Kino und wir konnten ihn interviewen. Die Filmkritik zum Film habt ihr bereits vor einigen Tagen bei uns bekommen. Wir haben sich Stu und Schlogger zusammengesetzt und den Film ausgiebig besprochen. Vor allem war es ein schönes Gespräch, weil sie auch eine unterschiedliche Wahrnehmung von dem Film hatten. Und nun hatten wir eben das Glück, ein Interview zu führen mit eben Taika Waititi und dem Produzenten des Films, Cathew Neal. Und die beiden saßen zusammen mit verschiedenen Journalisten am Roundtable. Das bedeutet also, dass auch wir die Gelegenheit hatten, unsere Redakteurin, die Lida, hier zu diesem Roundtable zu schicken. Und jetzt müsst ihr euch so vorstellen, dass da letztlich eine Handvoll Journalisten am Tisch sitzen. Alle stellen eine Reihe um Fragen und im besten Fall ergibt sich dann auch ein Gespräch mit eben den Interviewgästen, die man dort hat. Und die hört ihr dann hier auch. Das heißt also, ihr habt hier nicht nur Lida, die Fragen stellt. Das komplette Interview ist übrigens auf Englisch. Nein, ihr habt auch weitere Kollegen von verschiedenen anderen Quellen. Und die sitzen am Tisch, stellen Fragen. Wir haben das Ganze aufgezeichnet und darauf könnt ihr euch jetzt freuen. Knapp 20 Minuten warten auf euch. Eben Gespräch von Taika Waititi und Cathew Neal zum Film Jojo Rabbit und unter anderem auch den besonderen, sag ich mal, Fragen und ja einfach Gegebenheiten, die sich bei dieser Thematik ergeben und gerade eben auch, wie diese ganze Nazi-Satire letztlich auch in Deutschland funktionieren kann. Ihr könnt da sehr gespannt sein, ist ein tolles Interview geworden, freut euch drauf. Ich persönlich freue mich drauf, dass ihr uns in irgendeiner Form bewertet. Das ist eben bei Podcasts ganz cool, wenn ihr auf Apple Podcast, auf Google, auf Facebook, auf podcast.de und bei vielen weiteren Plattformen Podcasts bewertet. Wenn ihr das bei uns tut, dann hilft das den Telestammtisch sehr, noch in dem ein oder anderen Ranking aufzutauchen. Ebenso würde ich mich freuen, wenn ihr uns Feedback hinterlasst. Auf Facebook, auf Twitter, auf Instagram oder auch beim YouTube-Upload könnt ihr das tun. Genauso gut könnt ihr auch auf tele-stammtisch.de gehen. Da gibt es unter anderem auch den Blog zum Podcast. Auch da gibt es eine Kommentarfunktion. Bitte sagt uns, wie euch diese Interviews gefallen, wie euch unsere Filmbesprechungen gefallen und was ihr unbedingt noch von uns hören wollt. Das würde uns sehr freuen. Nun also viel Spaß bei diesem wirklich tollen Interview am Roundtable mit Taika Waititi und Cathew Neal, den beiden Köpfen hinter dem Film Jojo Rabbit. Bis dann, ciao.
Well, how long did you live here?
I lived here about 2 years, 97, 98, oh no, 2.5. 97, middle of 97. I left just before 2000.
Wow. So your German must be somehow existent.
Not much. It comes and goes, but only when I'm here. I don't speak it anywhere else, but I have to be here for a while, longer than one day, for it to really...
What were your impressions about German people? Like...
Back then?
Yeah. Or
great.
Nowadays?
I mean, I loved it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have stayed. You know, I wasn't like going to stay for the architecture or the cranes. No, it was because I made a lot of good friends here I very much enjoyed my time here, and there was a lot of artists here at the time, and I felt very at home.
And it
was also cheaper than New Zealand at the time, so it was that as well, which was great.
And did it influence your portrays of the Germans in your movie now, in a way?
Not really. I think mainly like some of the... No. Like, I guess my accent came from like a mixture of people that I know and sort of like some of the more quirky people that I'd met, and just that style. But then, I mean, as you know, just watching the film, there's like a... I mean, I don't know how many of those actors have even been to Germany, so I doubt that their portrayal feels very German. But that was also a big point of this, was that because it's written so heavily in English, you know, and mainly for English speaking people to perform, that, you know, I feel that it's already very different, I guess, to German sensibility, and it's a very contemporary approach to the dialogue, because I wanted people to be able to relate to it now in 18, 19, 20, and I wanted young people to be able to relate to it as well. And again, that's why we used the music that we used in the film, just to make it feel like the story could be happening at any time.
Were you a bit afraid of like coming here, or of the reaction in Germany? It's a special reaction, it's a special perspective, obviously.
I'm only concerned is if the jokes fall flat in the world, because some people I think will be reading it. And I don't know if that gets the same timing as, but most people, you know, that I feel the audience is aimed at, I mean, the film is aimed at, understand English enough to be able to get it in the moment.
The big question, obviously, is like, are you allowed to make fun of Hitler?
Nobody. Yes. Especially in our generation.
You are, I would say.
I think you are.
But still,
yeah.
This is always like coming up in a debate or.
I don't know. I think Charlie Chaplin gave us permission in 1939. But also, you know, I think that over the years, I think we're in good company because over the years people have been doing it with mixed results. But I'm not worried about that at all. And also, the film, there are some people who have criticized the film, but I think most of them haven't seen it. So that's like some of the criticism has been from people who just refuse to see it, and which is fine. Some people just, you know, for certain reasons, maybe it's for personal reasons to with their families or whatever, just aren't ready to see a film like this. On one side, I feel like there's a little bit of a shame because I feel like, you know, some degree they're missing out, but I also do understand that it might be too close to home and I have to respect that.
Right.
You make fun of the Nazis, but you also make a lot of excuses for them. Do you think it's that easy to say, like, oh, they've been manipulated? Because if you grow up in Germany, you hear it a lot. Oh, everybody was just manipulated, but people really bought into that ideology because they loved it. And now they're buying into it again, and it's all coming back. So do you think that Nazis today really need more empathy?
I don't think the film at all is empathizing with Nazism or fascism or people who truly believe in those ideologies, but it does make some attempt to humanize some of the people who were normal people in the war. There aren't many of actual people in the army in the film. It definitely doesn't empathize with any of the Gestapo. It makes them, you know, even though the approach to that, to their initial introduction is very Monty Python in its nature. But even with Sam Rockwell's character, I like to think that, you know, and I'm sure you're aware, there were many people who were in the army, who were career soldiers, who did not identify or did not join the party, and who were just patriots, but, you know, discovered probably when it was too late that they chose the wrong side. You know, so I feel like that's what Sam's character is like. I don't think anyone ever empathizes with Rebel Wilson's character, and I don't think anyone really cares about Alfie's character. I think, you know, it was a real effort on our part to make sure that it's from a child's point of view, and especially a 10-year-old child who doesn't know any better. And I think it's very easy for someone to say, yeah, but he was in the youth, he must have known. I mean, he was 10. So, you know, I think when I was 10, I was probably quite easily influenced, you know, and who knows if I wanted to. And again, you got to remember, these kids, they wanted to be part of a group. And if all of their friends in the neighborhood were joining this thing as a 10-year-old, that is sure as hell what you were going to try and do. And, you know, I challenge any 10-year-old. I mean, you have to be very strong-minded as a 10-year-old to say, oh, no, I wouldn't have done that. Because you were bullied as well if you didn't join, and you were picked on. And no 10-year-old really wants to be that person.
One of the interesting things, Roman, who plays Jojo, he was 10 when he played the role. He's now 12. He showed the movie to his friends in England. He's from England, at school. And one of his friends came up to him afterwards and said, oh, I love the movie. I mean, it's all about, like, kids learning, you know, we have to think for ourselves. I think that's one of the most, that was like a, when he told us that story, that was a really rewarding moment to hear that children could get that message from the movie. And that's, I think, one of the key things that we want to, you know, wanted to get across, was that actually you need to keep questioning your elders. You need to keep questioning the people that are telling you things, to make sure that they are actually telling you the right things, because you can easily just be told the wrong things and go along with it. So that was a really rewarding moment for me to hear that.
Right. Mr. Waititi, in your TED Talk from 2010, you mentioned that when you were a child, you were obsessed by of drawing the swastikas and the Hitler mustaches. Did you put this kind of experience into the portrayal of Jojo?
No, I think I kind of forgot that I said that by that point. I mean, it was never my intention to play that role, so it was never, when I was writing it, it was never really a thing that I was even thinking about. But going into that role, it was important that I didn't do a authentic portrayal of him, because that's not what the character is. And I think I would have needed a better actor to do that if I wanted a more realistic Hitler.
I mean, into your writing of the character of Jojo, your experience as being obsessed by drawing the swastikas.
Not really. I think just because it was something that was taboo growing up, you know, it was very uncool to draw swastikas, but it was just a thing, you know, when something's sort of forbidden or you're encouraged not to do something, I think as a very young kid, it's the first thing you want to do private, and you sort of like, I guess it wasn't that bad. It's like, you know, that's, I guess, some like naive way of kind of giving yourself more power over that stuff, I think.
And how did your family react when you showed yourself to them in the full Hitler costume?
My mother was fine with it. She, she's proud of everything I do. But also, we come from an intellectual family. We're very, we're just not afraid of someone pretending to be or dressing up like that. You know, that for us is not scary. It's, and it's not insulting. It's a, there's a point to the film, and the point of the film is not to tell a joke. The point of the film is not to make a sketch or to make the film a comedy. I think sometimes, the film, with other people trying to describe it, it can be misconstrued as a comedy about Nazis. And if you just simplify it to that, then it's doing the film a disservice. It's not a comedy, It's a drama about children learning to think for themselves with some jokes in it.
But there's some things, like horrible things, obviously the Germans did, that you don't maybe explicitly touch on in the movie, like the Holocaust, a little bit euthanasia. But watching it, I felt like you could have like gone there. You could have made it like even like way crazier, way tougher on the audience. Was it like, where was the line where you thought, I want to portray these things, but I will leave other things out?
Well, I wanted a lot of it to be implied. I'm relying a bit on people's previous knowledge, and I feel like the film would be another hour longer if I had to explain everything, which is what American films have to do. You have to explain every single thing to an audience. And I like to give the audience more credit for, to be smart enough to work it out for themselves. And, it's set right at the end of the war, and it's not set in a camp, and I'm not going to suddenly put the character on a train to go and have a look and see what actually happened in those camps, because that's not part of the story or part of his world. We can imply it by stories that people tell, we can imply the mother's death by showing these shoes and then showing him seeing the shoes and looking up out of shot. But it's not our style to then have a shot of Scarlett Johansson hanging from a thing just because we want to shock people or we feel like, that's going to make it more impactful. It's impactful enough to know that a young boy's mother is dead. And, and that's what it's about. It's not... I don't do films that's just not my style to be that blatant or to try and make people feel uncomfortable. The film has got a deeper message than that, and I think if you want to see that stuff, there are many other films that have been made before this that deal with that, that are more graphic. And I don't think it's shying away from anything. I don't think it's making light of the war or what happened. I think it's dealing with a very powerful subject in a way that has, I would say, a little bit more finesse than having to just suddenly, let's just show dead people everywhere. You know, let's keep cutting away to see what actually happened. You know, I think a lot of us do know that.
How surprised were you, I mean, by the Oscars?
Was that?
By the Oscars, I mean, this was a lot. This is a lot. I mean, nominations and chances. Were you ever, like, considering that you were would be considered?
I think that going into making this film with someone like Fox Searchlight, who have made a lot of films that have either won Oscars or been nominated for Oscars, I think that the conversation is always going to be there because it's, you know, it's a film made in, you know, or made by a Hollywood studio. So it's always going to get that attention by those people who vote. But shit, if you're going to make a film just to get Oscars, then God help you. But, you know, it's not the reason that we were just trying to do something like this.
Okay. Talking about...
In the beginning of the movie, there is this Hail Hitler pumping up scene between Hitler and Jojo. And I was wondering, when Jojo mispronounced Hitler, saying Hitler, you ask him, don't you speak proper German? Was that improvised? And if so, does this mirror your on-set relationship with Roman?
Yeah, definitely it mirrors it in the friendship that we have and the way that we can hassle each other on set and make fun of each other. And so that would be often a way that we would interact. And... that was an improvised line. In fact, most of that interaction was improvised. But, yeah, and that's, well, we shot that of the two cameras, you know, facing each other so that we could interact and could talk to each other properly. But, yeah, that is exactly how Roman and I interact.
Talking about the music, the songs, did you came up with them or the German version of Gib mir deine Hand? I mean... what did the Beatles say? What does everybody say about that?
Well, I think, as we all know, the Beatles were like the Hitlers of the 1960s. And so, you know, I think it's time to draw attention to, you know, to what they did. But the main thing was, it was, again, to keep it contemporary. And then the original script was, Heroes was always in there. Tom Waits was always in there. Arthur Lee and Love was in there. The Beatles song came just during prep when I wasn't entirely sure what song would be used, but I did know that I was going to be using that old footage to show the infatuation of the German people with Hitler. And when I was looking through all the old footage of the crowds going crazy and women crying and screaming and people fainting, that was when I sort of realized, oh, I guess he was like the Beatles of the 30s. He was a pop star and he was an icon, and he really, he had that effect. And that helps to explain to people the mindset of people, and especially young people, like little boys who looked up to him at the time.
But you did not hear the song in a German pub when you were here for the first time.
No, I always knew about the German versions of those songs. And there were other people like Roy Orbison's in there as well, singing Mama. And then there's also, I mean, Johnny Cash also did his songs. I mean, as you all know, a lot of those artists did that.
In the end of the movie, when the David Bowie song plays, it's a pretty upbeat mood. The sun is shining and everything feels good. And the main character actually looks like he's going to be like an open-minded 60s kid. But in Germany, the next oppressive system, the GDR, was just around the corner. Mm-hmm. And even the normal life wasn't that good. So isn't that a bit misleading to pretend, hey, now happy times are coming? Because that just wasn't true. And also, it's not so easy to look into a shiny, sunny future if just like maybe your whole family had been murdered or you had been from a concentration camp. Even if you said that's not what your movie is about, I mean, this was the reality of German life, that people had to live next door with like the enemies of yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this is something we discussed, and we thought that it's probably better in this context to at least imply that there's at least a little more hope than there was before. And if that's just the fact that some kids can be dancing on the street for that one moment, honestly, I don't want to then have them come outside and go, everything's great, and then the next day for them to go to an orphanage or for, you know, for them to be sent away somewhere else. That's not necessarily the way I think a film like this needs to end, and that's just the way it is, and that's a conscious decision on our part. Just to, and it's not, again, look at the film. It's a fable. It's not an authentic portrayal. I mean, otherwise, watch a documentary. Like, that's, you know, this, what we're trying to do here is actually connect with people in the modern world and show them it's not a film about history. It's a film about now. It's a film about how people interact with each other and how people and the attitudes of people who are around right now, and trying to change that mindset and to try and get people to understand there is still hope in the world. And otherwise, what's the point in art? What's the point in anything if we're just out to depress people and make them and make the world devoid of any hope? Otherwise, we should just say, you know what? Those neo-Nazis in the USA, well, I guess that's all that's going to happen. We should just let them do it. Because otherwise, I don't want to make films if it's the only role that I have.
Do you think we should politically talk to these people? Because obviously, in the movie, Elsa can persuade Jojo, but these, as you said, are children. But what's with, like, grown-ups? Because this has been a big debate, like, in Germany for the last 2 years. Like, should we talk to Nazis? Should we try to persuade them, or should we, like, shut them out of discourse?
Do you want my opinion on what we should do with Nazis?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't like the idea of inciting violence, but I do agree very much so that it's okay to punch them around the face. You know, at the end of the war, it's a very clear rule. If you were a Nazi and if you were public with that information and, you know, you supported those ideas, then there was no place for you in society and you went to jail. Now, sadly, in 2020 or even 2 or 3 years ago, if you're a Nazi and you want to promote those ideas, then you can go to a town square and you can have your own rally and you can invite people along and the police will leave you alone. Or you can be in Germany and you can actually start a party. No, I don't have any real leniency, or I don't feel like they deserve a platform.
Kann ich die machen? The running gag where you offer where Hitler offers Jojo cigarettes, I think it's hilarious, but how did you come up with this, especially since Hitler was a non-smoker and back then there was an anti-tobacco campaign in Nazi Germany?
I just think that the idea that someone so irresponsible is your imaginary friend, I think that's, again, it's more important than the precise historical facts of, like, I mean, you've got to show this guy is such an idiot and such a an irresponsible best friend in some way. And, you know, and that for me, it was a very important thing that it's, you know, and that we're not showing him the kids smoking, but yeah, that this very small thing is just this constant idea of like of him thinking that's appropriate behavior with a kid.
Just one thing about your question before, I think also, you know, Taika uses comedy as a way to draw people into the story and to let them use comedy as a way to sort of you know, drop down your barriers and maybe start a discussion, or maybe look at the truth of the matter and see that actually there's a lot of stupidity in what's being said. And I think this film uses comedy in that way, and that the laughs don't ever come for free. And I think that's part of the message and the way of using comedy.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Viel Spaß bei der Familie.
Ja, danke.